Season's greetings, everyone. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and special guest Terry. And today we are talking something very seasonal that we're celebrating. It's trees.
Yep, and today, Selena, we're talking specifically about the National Arboretum. The story of Eastwood Hill is long and often tortuous, but is ultimately the story of an individual with a vision that cost him dearly, but in the way of visionaries, brought a dream into reality that over 100 years later is globally renowned. And in our times of such threat to the natural world, a priceless resource of diversity and knowledge.
Pick all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pave paradise, put up a parking lot.
Those of us who grow urban gardens are often confined to modest decorative trees, shrubs and flowers and vegetables. But large or rural gardens, and often the early gardens of our urban landscape, bring us the gift of trees. Mighty trees with entire ecosystems in their roots and branches. Trees that keep the planet alive with their gifts of oxygen, shade, food for many species, soil creating humus, entire climates of water management. Right now, a battle is being fought in Avondale over a modest plot of land that contains a grove of native trees that someone had the foresight to plant 100 years ago. Today, Terry and I talk trees, about the National Arboretum in particular. So Terry, give us a background on this secret resource on the east coast of the North Island.
Yes, a very long-established resource and still not as well known as perhaps it would be. For Douglas Cook, who created it, Eastwood Hill, the creation of the Arboretum was almost compulsive. Born of Scottish migrant parents in New Plymouth in 1884, he left home at 17 and began work on land near Gisborne. He paid £140 for a block to grow peaches, and after five seasons, sold it for £583. Oh. With this, he bought a scrub-covered block from a larger station that had been leased from Māori to the first Pākehā to run sheep there, until it was purchased in 1882 by an Auckland financier. Not much changes in 100 years. Douglas Cook won a ballot to buy 250 hectares of that land on the Ngātapa block in 1910. Aged 25 and a hard worker, he set about making something of the stripped naked land with its papa and sandstone soils. There are photographs of this that you can see online and in a book they've published, and I tell you, it was raw ground. He ran some sheep, but quickly felt compelled to add beauty to the harsh landscape. Alone in remote hilly country, he cleared scrub, planted fencing, eucalyptus and pine shelter belts, and firewood, built a cabin, and planted an orchard. But he couldn't resist buying 75 roses. His aim was to develop land around his cottage as shrubberies, plantations and parklands. And as he said, to plant as much of the valley below the house as to beautify my view. And as you hear the story of Eastwood Hill and of Douglas Cook in particular, he was really passionate about beautifying things. He had antiques in his home and he sought out all sorts of beauty in all sorts of places. But in 1914, at the outbreak of World War I, Douglas volunteered and just before departing received an order of 100 trees and shrubs and another 100 rhododendrons and azaleas. There was some frantic planting before he shipped out. He was injured in Europe, lost most of the sight in one eye, and it was while convalescing in England that he stayed at several country homes with park-like grounds. This triggered his dream to make park-like grounds, and the serious planting of Eastwood Hill began in 1918 at the end of the war. To leap forward to today, we must skip over homes that burnt down, the building of dams and lakes to support the trees on often parched land, stories of a family made and lost, of helpers coming and going and enduring, and of the collection of plants from all corners of the globe. No phones, scarcely any roads, certainly no internet, and somehow with pen and paper and books and research, Douglas built an astounding collection of the world's trees. Douglas was a meticulous record keeper and established enduring relationships with Kew Gardens dendrologists and plant nurseries throughout the world. A summary of Eastwood Hill genera from 1996 reports 570 genera, with just 7 of those genera having 1,050 species between them. Today, the Eastwood Hill collection represents over 4,000 different species, cultivars, hybrids and varieties, including 170 species on the endangered species list. The creation of Eastwood Hill kept Douglas Cook and his workers in hard labour for years, kept him poor and finally wore him down. Douglas was clear from the early days that he was building a garden of great beauty for all New Zealanders. When the US dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, it gave him a renewed sense of urgency. Douglas wanted to create an ark of plant materials and knowledge, as he feared the loss of those Northern Hemisphere species in a time of war and pollution. As his health began to fail him, he worried about the preservation of the mighty arboretum. In 1965, with a failing heart, Cook sold Eastwood Hill to Bill Williams. The Williams family is many generations in the Gisborne region in farming, logistics and retail. Cook died in 1967 in his 83rd year. Bill Williams organised the development of a trust, with volunteers and leading organisations like the Forest Research Institute, Massey University, the Gisborne Regional Council, and supporters like David Bellamy. The trust has grown the facilities, the plantings, and the community involvement with Eastwood Hill. This work continues, and visitors enjoy tours, walks, accommodation, and events like weddings and the teddy bear picnic. In 1975, by Act of Parliament, Eastwood Hill was declared the National Arboretum of New Zealand, fulfilling Douglas's dream of building a garden for all New Zealanders. Development of the Arboretum as an ark now involves international organisations and designers. Listen to Thomas Waltz, US-based landscape architect, on their future hopes for Eastwood Hill.
We began work on it about 7 years ago, doing a master plan to start to reorganize the collection into the World Wildlife Fund mapping of biomes of the planet Earth. It has some of the only examples of the world's trees that exist in New Zealand. It's an absolutely extraordinary collection and well worth a visit. The aim of the project was to look 100 years out and try to understand how this collection could make a place for itself on the global stage of large conservation collections and botanic gardens. As the repository of so many important plants from the Northern Hemisphere within New Zealand, in many cases they're the only example of those plants that exist in New Zealand. So for research, scientific research, and also for propagation, it's a very important collection. Over the 100 years of its existence, a lot of the trees were unfortunately planted very close to each other and without much sense of order. Like, as plants arrived, Cook would plant them out. And so now that they're 100 years old, some of them are crowding each other out. So how do we carefully propagate and reorganize the collection so that it makes sense and it also has a long-term resiliency? Now, in the 21st century, one of the greatest threats is global climate change. And we're finding species in the Northern Hemisphere dying out either from climate extremes or from pests, introduced fungi or insects. So as we're losing some of these keystone species in our northern ecologies, perhaps Eastwood Hill could build on that sort of cultural history and vision of Cook, but update it for the 21st century. And it could become what we've called an arboreal ark, where live specimens could be brought to New Zealand, put through quarantine to make sure that we're not introducing any pathogens to New Zealand, and then planted out in the collection in the different families of plants at Eastwood Hill for stewardship. Should we ever be able to eradicate some of the pests like Dutch elm's disease or the woolly adelgid or the emerald ash borer, these pests that have absolutely wiped out the populations in the Northern Hemisphere, if we had a safe, diverse population of 50 to 100 trees in Eastwood Hill, we could then perhaps repatriate to the Northern Hemisphere. This could be of global significance as a kind of arc from which we could bring back the biodiversity.
Everyone who can make the trip to Gisborne can visit this natural wonder. It has a group quarters with bunk rooms and a couple of twin rooms with a community kitchen and a tree huggers library, very extensive library, which I think, you know, the universities and the Forest Research Institute and Rotorua and so on have contributed to. It's about 30 minutes drive from Gisborne, and you can make a day visit and wander the kilometres of pathways, get acquainted with 4,000 species of trees.
Oh my goodness.
Enjoy the ponds and garden plantings, the shrubs and bulbs of spring, the gorgeous colours of autumn. It is a walk around the world of trees.
Oh, lovely, Terry. Thank you for sharing that history, and it's so interesting. He sounds like quite a character, this Douglas Cook.
Oh, he was a character, and he was quite a sophisticated character, but he was put himself far out. I mean, this is hard land. It's quite extraordinary. Yeah. He put himself up a long valley, and it's very, very hot in that part of the world on the East Coast in summer, and of course there was no natural water on the land, so they had to build dams, and he had people who, I mean, they started out in sheds, living in sheds, who worked for him and with him, and he was pretty much a hard taskmaster by all accounts. And there were reputational issues about what an old meanie he was, but you know, when you read further into the history, you find like there is a road that's still a gravel road that runs up one side of the property, and it used to be an oxen trail for lugging stuff off into the hinterland, God knows to where exactly. And he planted apple trees all the way up that boundary so that the ox drivers and even the animals would have something refreshing to have on their big push up the hill. So tough he may have been, but he was also generous and in other ways.
Wonderful. Have you been there a lot to visit?
I've been there twice and I've stayed there as well. Ooh. So, you know, they're extended visits. And I'm going back for an autumn visit.
Wonderful.
And there's a publication called A Man's Tall Dream, which was the story of Eastwood Hill by John Berry. I think the interesting things are their sort of illustrations and photographs that show you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you're a tree gardener, which is my inclination in the city, despite being in the city, because I can't quite manage an arboretum. if you're a tree gardener, you are making a very long-term commitment.
Yeah.
Like here at Planet FM, I'm looking at the windows at oak trees that were planted well over 100 years ago and that are, as far as I know, protected trees. And there's a huge Lebanon cedar. Likewise, the history, previous history of this area as an institution, as a mental health institution. And there are a lot of trees on the campus. In fact, there is an acknowledged Unitech Arboretum.
Yes, I've heard of that one. And the students were collaborating and setting that up. I mean, like naming all the species and putting them into the database so that we have a record of all those wonderful trees planted many, many years ago.
Yes, and it worries me a little bit because this is one of the large open spaces sort of within reach, 8 kilometres, say, of the city, and is about to be covered in houses. And, you know, that's a bit of a sad story once again to the life of trees and what's happened to trees in Auckland, because there were some fairly stringent rules in place, and then around the time just before the super city, they took all of those rules away, and you had to actually nominate a tree to be protected. And of course, nobody knew that you had to do this, and or very few people. So people like the Tree Council went rushing around trying to activate people into registering trees.
Mm.
But it doesn't by any means constitute the kind of wealth of trees that the city has, and a lot of them are under threat.
Such a sad story, because originally Auckland didn't have many trees. It was quite treeless before all the settlers came. So we're only protecting the ones that have been planted. Like, there wasn't much cover. So
I don't know, because when you there's been, you know, a lot of animated discussion and activity around the replanting of the Munga, with them chopping down oaks and things and replanting them with native species, and of course the hoary old pine that was on One Tree Hill, the one tree on the top of One Tree Hill being replaced. This has all come up for rich debate as to how much of native cover there was over the city. And but, you know, I'm a tree lover, of be they exotic or otherwise.
Yeah.
And the thing about Eastwood Hill, as you'll hear from the discussions with the landscape architect, that there is the possibility of an arc of Northern Hemisphere species that they're developing. That was part of the intent that Douglas had when, after the atomic bomb was exploded, was that Northern Hemisphere could well be destroyed. Now, that drive for making an ark and keeping an enrichment of species is now in the hands of climate change.
Yeah.
And climate change is actually devastating a number of tree crops in the Northern Hemisphere. Mm. And they're looking to develop some of those and, shall we say, look after them, nursery them down here and at Eastwood Hill, so that should they find ways of overcoming some of the bugs and the climate issues that are destroying things like Dutch elm disease and so on, that they can restore some of the forests of the Northern Hemisphere from that. So I love our native species, but I love lots of species from all around the world as well.
Maybe someone else in a different country is conserving our native ones in their other regions.
Yeah.
It could be like an exchange, like you hear about the Global Seed Vault in Germany.
Is it Norway? Yeah.
Yeah, and they have collected seeds from all over the world in case of an event like climate change or nuclear Armageddon.
Yeah.
That they'll still have those seeds, so if they need them, they actually have, you know, a stock of them.
But, of course, the thing about, well, about all plants, but about trees, is finding the right climate, the right setting, the right soils, and encouraging their growth in just the right conditions.
Yes.
Because a seed is a precious little package, but it has to find the right place to settle.
Yeah. I'd love to visit the Eastwood Hill. I haven't been, but it's on my bucket list.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the fact that it was made the National Arboretum, there are other arboretums around the country, mostly created by enthusiasts of one sort or another. The scale of this and the sort of the initial gathering of their species. Like, there's one story I feel so sorry for this guy. I mean, everything I hear about Douglas Cook and his determination is kind of like mind-boggling, because, you know, as a gardener, that how much work goes into finding and planting something and then watching it die is like a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. Then he had people that he connected with in Argentina, for instance, because they're Southern Hemisphere, and found special Argentinian species and arranged to have them shipped. This is all, you know, handwritten letters.
Yeah.
It's almost pigeon post. And, you know, sailing by ship and getting the letter and ordering the trees, and then those trees being shipped back.
Yeah.
And him approaching what was New Zealand Railways of the time and saying, you know, these trees are coming, and when they come, they had to be offloaded somewhere in the Bay of Plenty. I think it was around Whakatane somewhere, because there was no rail through to Gisborne.
Right.
And he wrote extensive instructions and information about don't just put them in a shed. You know, they will need to be watered, and I will be on my way. So this all happened, and he got his horse and trap and drove through the Waiweka Gorge as it is, if you've ever driven through there. Oh. It's one of the, you know, the longer, trickier drives, and gets to Whakatane or thereabouts and finds a pile of withered, dead specimens sitting on the platform where they were unloaded, where nobody had paid any attention to them whatsoever.
Oh, no.
So they made their way all the way from Argentina. He made his way. That would be more than a day's trek through the gorge with a horse and trap. And he gets there and finds them all dead. And I think the kind of brilliance that went into the selection and the sourcing and the kind of dialogues that he had with dendrologists all over the world and the discoveries that he made from every corner of the planet and then getting them here under those circumstances and building this arboretum on what was hideous land.
Yeah.
I sort of look at it and I think this is astounding work.
What a labour of love.
It is.
So passionate to, you know, keep going with it. Like, you might have started giving up after that, but...
Well, people did. People gave up on him. He was obviously... He didn't make a good family man, as it turns out, because he was obviously just a tad obsessed.
Was he married?
Yes,
he had a family?
He did have... a marriage and a child. Initially, the wife came from Auckland, and they were initially together, yes, in Auckland. But
I can imagine.
And she did stay some years, but in the end, it didn't work out. Oh. We wouldn't know much more about it. But I think the other thing is the amazing work that Bill Williams did.
Yeah.
He hadn't even been there, yeah, and they had a mutual friend who did some of their legal work for them, who was some former military officer, colonel so-and-so, in Gisborne, who said, Bill, there's this thing going on, I have this client, he's not well, there's, yeah, this thing he's building out the back there, and it could be lost. And, yeah, this guy stepped up and then did years and years and years of getting volunteers. Mm. It was in a shabby state by the time he got to it.
Mm-hmm.
They rebuilt buildings. They replanted quite a few of the trees because they were planted too close together.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's quite interesting.
So amazing.
Because sometimes I think of myself, I have, shall we say, an unplanned garden.
Yes.
If it grows there, that's the right spot.
Yeah.
And so you can't always
imagine moving a huge tree just because it's too close.
So they had, you know, big working parties and volunteer parties, and then they went on to get the support of all sorts of other institutes,
mm,
and then to build this building, which is, lovely setting. And doing, I think, the idea of the fact that they did the bunk rooms means that, like, people, like, you and five friends who might,
yeah,
be mad on trees can make a trip, yeah, and sort of, go to the bunk rooms, which are quite affordable.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's big commercial kitchens that you can use. And of course, scientists and things have conferences there. I know,
yeah,
people in the forestry business, you know, have been there for conferences, and they might be hosting 20 or 30 people on it. And then to build a library to go with it.
Oh,
you
that's
know,
after my own heart.
Exactly.
Tree hugger's paradise. And
so the fact that we have a national arboretum,
yeah,
came as news to a lot of people.
Mm.
I think David Bellamy was the first one to make note of it, but it came on because they, again, Williams and the Trust brought him, I think he was coming to New Zealand for other projects, I'm not sure, but got him involved. And so it appeared on the news back in the sort of, I don't know, was it the late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah.
But, you know, not that many people are watching the news and necessarily sort of following what David Bellamy's on about.
Mm.
And then the gardening program, what's her name?
Maggie Barry.
She featured it,
yes,
on one of her television shows, which, of course, was popular time and a popular audience.
Yeah.
And suddenly New Zealand woke up and went, oh, hang on a minute, we've got one of these? Mm. Really? So it's still, as Thomas Waltz says in that little clip that we played, knowledge of the arboretum and, you know, public knowing about,
yeah,
it and,
yeah,
becoming involved with it,
yeah,
is a crucial part,
yeah,
of its ongoing
so
success.
So if it's got accommodation, then more people can go and visit it from out of town.
Yes, it,
yeah,
has to be planned because it's not like there's only two twin spaces,
mm,
that, you know, like a peer might be travelling and
yeah,
stop in.
Yeah.
But to get your bunk rooms and stuff,
yeah,
like that, you would probably need to plan well ahead.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, you could decide to have, I don't know, little conferences or little gatherings or reunions or whatever.
True.
Or a spring get-together or whatever.
Could you have your wedding there, maybe?
I think it has been used for that. Yeah, it does. There is some suggestion,
yeah,
of that.
I heard you talk about the teddy bear's picnic.
Yeah, that would be mostly a local.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But still, that's something to, you know, get people, you know, seeing them.
And quite frankly, you know, the whole thing about trees, I mean, I'm passionate about trees because I think they are, without a doubt, the saviours of the planet,
mm,
at so many levels.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly in our current circumstances, but in so many other ways, in the creation of ecosystems and,
yeah,
the maintenance of all the other life forces that call on them.
So important.
And then I read a statistic that says there's an estimate, after the change of regulation in,
mm,
Auckland, there's an estimate as much as a third of Auckland's urban tree cover was lost between 2013 and 2016.
So terrible. So apparently it wasn't even the Auckland super city. It was on a government level that the law was changed for,
really,
protection of urban trees. So, and that was under the national government, the that protection was taken away. And yes, that resulted in a lot of loss of our trees. And apparently South Auckland lost 86% of their tree canopy cover.
86?
Oh, no, 86%. But still, that's quite a significant amount. Ideal cover for urban areas is 30% cover for tree canopy. But no suburb has achieved that in Auckland, at any rate. The only one is Kai Pataki on the North Shore. So when you think about, you know, that area, it has sort of sections of reserve, but...
Yes, it doesn't seem amazingly treed unless you take into account there's a big reserve that they ran the motorway right through over near St. Peter's or St. Paul's Maori College, just near Takapuna. And then you've got things like Kauri Park and round the Chelsea Sugar, all of the fringe around the Upper Harbour, well covered. But, I mean, the thing is, why aren't we planting instead of destroying? I don't even begin to understand why we would be destroying. There is a lot of, I think there's a lot of nervousness around individual, you know, home ownership and the planting of trees on small sections and urban sections. And that's about getting wise to what are the right trees in the urban setting.
Exactly. So maybe nurseries need to get behind that and...
Well, the garden centres tend to sell by fashion.
Yeah.
And never mind that the tree is going to be bigger than your house. I think there needs to be a lot more discussion with people who are buying trees in a garden centre as to what's going to happen, including a whole lot of hedging species. Mm. That seems to be where a lot of the... So lily pili, all those...
Oh, those terrible lily pillies.
Those hideous old lily pillies that were sold as hedging plants and going, oh, no, they'll be fine. They'll be a metre high. They won't be a metre high. They will take over the building and the section.
And they also attract that little bug that eats them and they go all funny and motley. They're terrible.
Yeah, and of course, and when it comes time where people realise these have got to go, then they will be counted in the destruction of trees.
Mm.
And I'm not totally against the removal of trees. I think it's about the right trees in the right place.
Right plant, right place. Exactly.
And I think looking at some of the street trees that have been used is a good advisory. Like a lot of parts of, well, sort of central and east Auckland, there was a period where they planted a lot of titoki.
Mm.
Now, titoki is a beautiful urban tree.
Yes.
It's completely manageable. You can prune it and prune it and prune it and it still bounces back with great joy.
Beautiful.
Compared with, say, some of the plane trees that they used in Grey Lynn, which are really, I mean, I love that they're there and that you have those streets with leafy streets, but they've got that dust on them that goes everywhere and makes people sneeze, and the leaf drop is phenomenal.
Oh.
So you have to think, and then there's another part, there's a part of Herne Bay, a secret couple of streets that I'm not going to tell you exactly where that have had the tree planting that was done as the street trees were macadamia nut trees, and the gutters are full of macadamia nuts.
Wonderful. Someone had the foresight to plant those. Now, Terry, just going back to the notable tree register, and you said that people didn't really know about it. It's online, and I had a look at it, and there are 192 trees registered for Auckland area. So that's not much, is it?
That's not much.
Most of them around Epsom, Mount Albert and Hillsborough.
Yeah.
And I did a little squiz on it and found the tallest one was a Norfolk pine in Epsom. And the largest in size-wise diameter was like a rubber tree. And, yeah, the tallest native tree was, of course, the kauri tree in the Waitakere Ranges.
Mm.
So you can have a look at that and you can actually register your own
So is there a web link for that? Where is that?
Just Google New Zealand Notable Tree Register. And, yeah, they have a map of everything and they've actually numbered all the trees that are registered. So you can put a tree forward if you think it's a notable tree.
Yeah, let's register more and more of the really valuable ones.
Yeah, get on that site. Yeah. I'll put the link on the Facebook thing so you can have a look. Yeah, so.
And with your planning, since we're all travelling in New Zealand.
Yes.
Let's plan to go out to Gisborne, and it's 35 k's from Gisborne to the Eastwood Hill National Arboretum.
Oh, definitely. Oh, that's on my bucket list. Thank you, Terry, so much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you, Selena, for the time.
Okay. Happy gardening, everyone, and let's get out and enjoy our trip.